This Fractals, which is a very strange name till you hear his talk on it, is about building reproducible ministry teams. And the principle is basically this principle of the quad. Let me give you an illustration. The best way I can teach this is probably give you an illustration. So I'm consulting with this church down in Georgia. I don't do that much anymore. I still consult with churches, just not in Georgia. A little Georgia humor there. They're in a portable situation. Church has just done absolutely amazing things. They're in this little small town, actually a military town. They now run about 3,000 people. But back in the day, they were running about 600-700 people, and I went in to just work with them for a day. And they had a position in their church that they had this one guy who liked to go out and put the sign up at the corner. That was his entire job. You know, he'd put the sign up at the corner. And they, you know, their church was down. They met in this portable facility. So they put this sign up at the corner. It was a really nice sign. Big, you know, you had to tie it up. You had to put these stakes in the ground. And you could only do it on the weekend because you had to take the sign down during the week for ordinances. Well, this guy was sort of hard to deal with. And he was, you know, he was really hurting some stuff. He was kind of grouchy around. So we had to figure out how to get rid of this guy. That was the goal. But you couldn't just go out and get rid of the guy because he'd been around forever. And this was his job, you know. So we sat down with him and we said, okay, let's take your area of signage and let's divide it into four areas. And so the first area, of course, is you've got to get the sign. Now, this is really simple, but you got to remember, this is a simple guy we're working with. So you got to go get the sign. So the sign's in the truck. You have to go get the sign. Second thing you have to do is you have to place the sign. You have to take it down to the corner and place it. You got to put it out there and make it look nice. He made it look really nice, did a good job. Then he had to take down the sign. That was his fourth area, or third area. He had to take it down. But then we had this fourth area that we didn't really know what to do, which we called sign repair. Because the way this thing worked, even though it was a pretty good sign, about every couple of months, you know, it began to look bad, and especially if it rained or if it got dirty, you know, they had to wash it or they had to get a new sign or whatever. So we divided this thing up into four areas, and what we began to say to him is, look, there's going to come a time when you're going to be sick. And he had been sick, and he had some health issues. And we said, so what we need to do is we need to train people to do all four of these things. And so are there people that you know that could get the sign? So what we want you to do next Sunday is you don't go get the sign. You let them go get it, and they'll meet you at the corner. So you still get to place the sign, which is what he loved to do. He loved to place the sign. And then we wanted to get him out of church as quickly as possible, so we sent him to take down the sign. No, I'm just kidding. Then we said, okay, so who do you know that can help you take down the sign? Because, you know, a lot of times after church, you get tied up, or you've got to get home to your wife or whatever. So eventually what we did, you see where I'm going with this, right? We eventually had people that could do all of this stuff, and we made him the team leader of the sign. Now, that's a simple little illustration, but could you not do that with every area of your church? You know, so you just divide it up into quads. So you take every volunteer area and you divide it into four areas, and then you find people to do each of those small areas. Now, we're going to talk about what you need to tell them and how they need to do it, but it's just a little simple way to create new volunteer positions. I'm trying to resist saying this guy's name, but I can see him just clear, and I'm trying to resist saying this church name because some of you in this room know this guy that I'm talking about. And you know the pastor of this church anyway. I don't want to in any way demean this because this was a significant thing. You got to remember, this guy had been doing this since the church started. I mean, this was his job, you know, but he needed some help. He needed to reproduce that. And so we just eventually multiplied that out. And at first, he just had somebody who was the sign getter. Then he had somebody who was the sign repair guy. Then he eventually filled that out and he became a team. So you can do that with all kinds of areas of your church. It's a simple way to divide all existing ministry areas. Next, and this is related to that. Come on in, take your seat. You don't have to. Come on up. Create ABC teams for each ministry area. So that's the other way we could have approached this sign problem. We could have said, okay, we want you to lead team A, and maybe that is team A. Well, then we create team B. And so team B has a different team leader, but they have four people working under them. And then you create team C, and we do that. We normally do this with like worship teams, right? You know, you have like the ABC is hard because it sounds like you got an A team and a B team. So you got to give them names. You know, like if you're in Florida, you've got like the Gators and the Seminoles and, you know, something like that. In L.A., you got like the Freaks and the Geeks and, you know, stuff. I don't know what you have in L.A., but, you know, and in New York, you've got two types of people, those who wear black and those who don't. And so, you know, you could do this all kinds of ways. But you see what I'm doing? You just create these different teams. So you've got the A worship band who, you know, they lead for a month and then they take a month off. And then you've got the B worship band, which sounds bad because they're like the Bs, but they're really not B quality. They just happen to be the B team. That's why it's problematic. You know, so then you got the B team and, you know, they do the second of the month. And so then you rotate teams. And so no team serves for more than a few months. This is what we used to do with ushers. You know, you've got the usher captains and they do it for a month or a quarter or whatever. And so you do that, you rotate that through. It's just a way to multiply teams. The reason I put this in here is I don't want to throw out stuff that's worked in the past, because there's some really good stuff in ministry that's worked in the past, and so we want to bring that in. Another great strategy, and this is just a simple one as we move through this section, is to plan a shadow or a friend day. You know, this is where you invite every person who's serving to bring a friend with them and shadow them for the day. You know this strategy, right? There's probably some resource out there about how to do this, but it's really simple. We just take this guy, let's just call him Jack, not his real name. We say, okay, Jack, look, you've been putting this sign up here, and so what I want you to do is next week I want you to find a buddy, and they're just going to come shadow you and see what you do. That way, you know, if you ever get hit by a truck or whatever, you know, we've got somebody else who knows where the stuff is. Because look at this. One is a really bad number for anything, except for a spouse, okay? So one is a really bad number for anything, except for your spouse, okay? So I just want to qualify that. But in ministry, in the non-spousal world, one's a really bad thing. I mean, it's bad to only have one person who knows the combination to the lock. I mean, even Coke, right? They have two people who know that secret formula, you know? So one's a really bad number. So options are not optional when it comes to your ministry setting. So you've got to have different people who know how to do different things. So you create a shadow day and a friend day. And basically what happens with that is maybe they like it and they start serving with their person and you build a process to do that. Related to that, you know this strategy, so I won't go into it. Hold a ministry or volunteer fair. That still works. You can't do it every week. You probably can't even do it, you know, every semester. But, you know, once a year, once every 2 years, you have a ministry fair. The big mistakes that most people make when it comes to the ministry fair, number one, the ministry positions aren't clear. They aren't clear. What exactly do you want me to do? And then number two, the sign up is complicated. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but I'll just mention it right now. The next one is a big one. I want to talk about it. Not a long one, but it's a big one. And that is use big days and special events to challenge people to serve. I used to say this phrase about never waste a crisis. And then, like, it's been in the news lately. So this is going to date it. But, you know, if you're a follower of politics, whether you're a Fox News person or an MSNBC person, it doesn't matter to me. But, you know, there is such a thing as never waste an opportunity when it comes to get new people involved in ministry. And I don't mean that in any political way. But let's just say you've got a big day coming up. And by this, I mean a non-Easter big day. Real quick aside, I actually believe on Easter, you should run your ministry system lean and mean. And the reason why is on Easter, every person who's involved in serving is one less person who can invite a friend. So I don't want that many people serving on Easter. I want them inviting their friends. So what I say to people on Easter, look, if you're not going to bring a friend, the best way you can serve our church is to volunteer. But if you're bringing a friend, I don't want you to volunteer. Because if you're volunteering in kids ministry, you're not going to bring a friend. You know, so that's a whole other issue. But normally what I'll do on big days or special events is that's a great opportunity to get people to serve. And so you think about people who are sitting out there who are not serving right now. They may serve on a big day or on a special event when they wouldn't serve every Sunday. But what if you could get them involved in serving on that special event and then turn them into regular servers? Let me give you an example with this. We used to meet at a place down here on 34th and 8th. It had two theaters inside of it. We normally met on the top theater, which was called the Grand Ballroom. But every once in a while, they would have an event in that theater, and we would have to meet on the bottom floor. Now, it was no big deal. I mean, honestly, it was really no big deal for us. I mean, we just brought it was actually in some ways easier because we didn't have to go up the elevator. But I would leverage that every time we had to move. I would write people in our church who aren't serving, and I would say, we just found out that this Sunday, we have to meet on the ground floor. And I would create this urgency. And I'd say, this would be the perfect Sunday for you to come early because this is a great opportunity because it's going to take more volunteers than ever to make sure we have a great experience on the ground floor. And you know what? People would sign up because I just gave them a reason why. I mean, it wasn't like a big deal. We actually didn't even need more volunteers, but it was a great opportunity to get people involved in serving. So when you think that way, you're always thinking about, okay, what are we doing this week that could get more people involved in serving than we got involved last week? Now, obviously, if you're doing a special event, you know, this Sunday we've got a guest speaker. We're expecting record crowds. We want you to come. You know, this week we're having this big thing afterwards. We're doing this. We want you to get involved. We're doing this big outreach afterwards. We know we're going to get involved. We're starting a new location. We're starting a new site. We're starting an overflow room. Whatever you're doing, you're always looking for these opportunities because people get involved when you have a reason why, when they have a reason why. Yeah, that's a great one. I knew there's a reason we like Carrick come to this seminar. we did a children's festival. And this was just a big party. It was like, it was sort of like one of those Halloween things, but you don't want to call it Halloween because you're Baptist. And so we were going to do it like on October 30th. And it was going to be like an afternoon event. And we brought in all these bounce houses and brought in, you know, candy and face paint. You know how these things work. And so what we said to people is, look, we don't allow people to serve at our church in children's ministry unless they go through basically, you know, a CIA background check. I mean, that's, we're pretty serious about that. But we knew that doing this was going to get a lot of people who had not gone through the background check, but they wanted to serve in kids ministry to serve. So we used that to get new people to serve. We said, would you come help us set up? Would you come help blow up these bounce houses? Would you come and help, you know, set up the face painting area? Now, we're not going to let them around the kids, but we're going to let them set up, you know? And so that brought a whole new group of people. Well, guess what we did after that was over? While they're in there tearing down, we get back up on the stage and say, hey, everybody, stop for just a moment. You know, I want to just applaud you because, you know, we had 100 new people come and serve in this area. So we applauded them and we say, hey, by the way, you know, here's our children's ministry person. And if you would be interested in being a regular children's volunteer and making this kind of exciting thing happen every week at the Journey, why don't you see her, sign up, we'll get you involved in the background process and get you involved in serving. So you see, it leveraged those big events. So you never miss an opportunity to get new people involved in serving. And that's a different way of thinking. Make sense? Okay, here's a tactic that I didn't know how to state generically, but it's one you can use. And so you can figure out how to apply this. And it simply is, use people from the last membership or baptism class to serve at the next membership or baptism class. Does that make sense? See, it's a tactic, but there's a universal application. So if somebody is baptized in January and your next baptism is maybe the big, you know, outdoor baptism in the summer, why not get the people who were baptized in January, February to come serve the people who are being baptized in June? And then you get new volunteers involved that way. Because now you get them. And so what you do after the baptism's over, you pull them aside, you thank them for volunteering, and you get them signed up. You say, look, if you enjoyed doing this, you might enjoy being a greeter on Sunday, or you might enjoy, you know, working in children's ministry. You might enjoy working wherever. Does that make sense? Because if they had a great experience last time, they want to help make a great experience. By the way, we totally run our membership process this way. I mean, membership class is, you know, a pastor with a PowerPoint presentation, and the volunteers from the last membership class. That's how we run it. So they handle the check-in, they take the pictures, they print the forms. I mean, they do everything, because if they just went through membership class, they're excited about being a new member, so now they're going to come serve at the next one. And then the goal is, then after they finish serving, take them off into the back and say, look, you came to serve today. We're a member-supported church. You get them involved in serving again. So it's just a tactic. Now I want to address this question. Should I allow non-Christians to serve at my church? You don't have to necessarily agree with me here. You have a nicer diagram than I do, by the way. Your diagram is really nice. I can't believe I actually came up with these diagrams. It took me like 8 hours to draw that little thing. Do you know how hard it is to do that with my limited skills? Let me talk about this non-Christian serving, because I think this is a big area in ministry, and you don't have to buy into this, but let me just at least push you just a bit. In the old way of thinking, there were three stages of faith, and they were sequential. First, a person had to believe, and then that person had to belong or become a member, and then that person would start to become like Jesus Christ. So that's the old way of thinking. And then that's the way of thinking in most churches. I don't mean old and bad. It wasn't a bad way of thinking. It was just a limiting way of thinking. So you would first believe, then you would belong, and then you would become. I believe the more biblical view is that the steps are simultaneous. That a person actually starts belonging sometimes before they start believing. And then they start becoming even before they belong. So in other words, you allow this to be a little more fluid. The first way is Newtonian. The second way is a little more quantum, I guess, is the way to say that. Let me explain this. I was consulting with this church down in Florida. And It's the church that hosts the coaching network down there. So some of the guys know this church, and it's not a bad story. So I'll tell you the name of the church and all. But we're down there, and they came from a historical tradition where you didn't allow non-Christians to serve, but they were in desperate need of parking lot greeters. I mean, they had just expanded, and they needed people to work in the parking lot. You know, wear the vest, do the stuff. Guys love that, by the way. I mean, yeah, they get out there, get to play cop. You know, you've got like dentists and lawyers. You know, parking lot greeters are kind of like Harley riders. They're not really bad guys, you know, except on Sunday. And so that's kind of how they are, you know, because they get to dress up and they got the stuff and they're flagging people down, you know, and you know, protecting kids as they walk across the street. So they really needed some parking lot greeters. So we began to examine, you know, is it possible, because they had a lot of unchurched guys in their church, is it possible to get some of these guys who wanted to serve to let them serve? So eventually, you know, they got this through. They agreed to let that happen. Do you know how many of those guys over the next period of time came to faith in Christ? And they'd been sitting in the pew for a long time. But by getting out there in that parking lot and rubbing shoulders with other Christian guys, now it wasn't all unchurched people. You know, the leader of the ministry was still a Christian. You know, the key guys were still Christians. They've been there a long time. But somehow or another, by allowing those unchurched guys to rub shoulders with the other Christian men, it more opened their heart to the gospel than if they had just continued to attend. So it goes back to that thing I said earlier, that the same part of the heart that closes a person to Christ is the same part of the heart that's opened up when somebody gets involved in serving. So, you know, to this day, they allow unchurched people to serve in the parking lot. And, you know, I allow unchurched people to serve a lot at our church, because I really believe that sometimes unchurched people have to start belonging to something before they believe. Does that make sense? It's a big hurdle, but if you can ever get over it, it's healthy. Now, I don't let them serve too long. You know, but so what I try to do is I try to build a system. Let me give you another example.